Welcome to episode 6 of the First Stage Podcast. My name is Aaron. I'm here with Caleb. Welcome back, Caleb. It's good to be back, man.
Yeah, good to be back in podcast mode here. I'm sorry. I missed y'all last time.
It's all good, man. Like, we understand, you know, it's a scary environment going on here. But
I was all prepped and ready to go, and I just get really bad migraines, and I had one just kicked me right in the teeth about 20 minutes before I was supposed to head over here, and I would have just been sitting on the microphone not saying anything, so I wouldn't have been here anyway. So it was probably good that we had a little sub last episode.
Yeah,
so.
I thought Steven did a fine job subbing in here and stuff. And yeah,
don't blow him up too much. He did fine.
I mean, like, in this environment, I'm sure that, like, you know, like, everyone is having migraines with the way the world is falling apart. So, like, I'm sure it was a much needed break, and that's cool. We are here with our guest, Mr. Chris Hobart. How's it going, Chris, man?
I'm doing well, Aaron. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're going to go ahead and get in. And so, like, with Paul last week, I had a specific intro that I played for him. So I made one for you. So here you go.
Oh, great.
Chris Hobart. First Stage. Chris Hobart song. First Stage.
I think we get probed.
You hear that? That's a sound everyone's credits score going up because of Chris Hobart. Because he's on First Stage.
All right. Yeah. So that's like Chris Hobart. She like that. Dude, was like, yeah. Credit score's going up because Chris Hobart. Like,
yeah, I'll take any of the boosts for that intro.
Yeah. I said that because this is the least diverse episode we've had because we are the most whitest guys ever on this podcast. So everybody's credit score is going up for sure.
Hell yeah. Wait, you hung out with those guys? 9 points.
Yeah. All right. Experience them all about this. Yeah. Tracking our dad anyway.
That's right.
But being in town, before we get into this, I just want to say I saw this truck, like, I've seen it twice in, like, the last 2 days, and, like, it says Fat Matt something, and the first time I saw it, I'm like, Fat Matt, that guy makes probably a dope burrito, you know, like on the side of the thing, and then I saw it the second time, it was, like, Fat Matt's Roofing, and I'm like, that's a terrible name for a roofing guy. I was like, I feel like Fat Matt's probably pretty lazy. I don't know.
I feel like I've seen that truck. Have you seen Matt Roofing?
Yeah, yeah. Only recently, like in the last week or whatever, I saw it driving around. I'm like, and like, I didn't see what it said. I just saw Fat Matt's. So I'm like, man, where's that burrito truck going? You're like, all right.
I like that it made you hungry. Fat Matt. Yeah, well, follow that truck.
The last thing you want on your roof is a fat guy.
Yeah, yeah. I was just like, Matt doesn't work in the sun. You know, it's like,
Skinny Matt's Roofing would be like, okay, that seems more reasonable.
We only work when the sun goes down because it gets too hot for Fat Matt up there.
I mean, if you're Fat Matt and stuff, it's just like, I feel like you should change your name to John Shingle or something if you're doing roofie.
Yeah.
You
know, like.
Flat Dang. Matt. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
Not fat.
John Shingle.
It's a great roofie name. Yeah. But we are here with Chris Hobart. Chris has been in comedy for the last, I would say, 4 or 5 years. Is that close?
Yeah, like, four.
When did you start doing comedy, I guess?
In May 2016.
May 2016. So yeah, we're on we're a little bit past the 4 year mark on comedy. Yeah. That's awesome.
You count it because I haven't done it since October last. It's been about a year.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about and stuff because you were on the scene a bunch and then you dropped off a lot and then you came back. What was that? I know you have a real job. You're like a real person.
And stuff. Family.
Not like degenerates like most of us are.
Responsibility and all sorts of shit.
Yeah, I got a few obligations aside from comedy, but once I got married, I was able to do it a little bit at the start, and then once I had my first kid, still wasn't that bad, but as soon as the second kid came, there's no way I can leave my wife alone.
It's a team effort on that, for sure.
I've got the car seats in my car right now. My wife is not happy, because I was supposed to leave them and take her car, but we forgot at the last minute, and
So yeah. She's like stuck at her house, and she's like, I don't have the car seat, so I can't leave these children.
Yeah, so I feel kind of bad. That was sorry.
Or leave with these children, excuse me.
Yeah, she was supposed to take them somewhere to see like Grammy and Grampy, and it didn't, yeah.
Oh, that's like the go-to for like the family. It's just like, we're going to drop at Grammy's, and like we'll have like a couple hours, and then they'll come back, and you're like,
super happy my grandparents, or my parents, their grandparents moved here, and they're going to help us with the kids, because, man, one was not terrible. I mean, but two is like a big jump to go from one to two kids. There's not a time off for anybody. You just got to.
Oh, I'm sure. And like they're not that far apart. How far apart are they?
They are 22 months apart, so a little under 2 years. So that's
just beat out the Irish twins.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to grind hard now. And then once they get to a certain age, then you just. Then
put them to work.
You put them to work and you have them take care of each other. That's
they're doing that right now. That's pretty good. Interesting. Like, it used to be a struggle dropping them off at daycare and be like, oh, they'll start crying. Both of them come back and be like, hey, Harper, I need you to be a good big sister. Can you take brother to his class? And then he'll start crying to come back, but she'll be like, no, brother, come on. I'll be like, ah, got him.
Nice.
So nice.
It's already begun, but good. They're as long as I keep them on the right team, you know, we're going to be all right.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, it's real tough to get out, especially like on a, you know, I used to do Wednesday nights and Tuesday nights were my nights, and I'd have work the next day, so I'd have to leave early. Like, yeah, I just felt bad. Like, it was part of like guilt, because when you go to a comedy set, you know, you want to, well, first, you got to stay for everybody. It's kind of a jerk move to go in there and do your set and just bounce. Like,
right.
At least in the Lubbock scene, it seems like we're very like unique in the fact that we care about the other comedians.
Yeah. Sure. I would feel bad if I went and like you hadn't gone. I'm like, well, I did my set, bye. Like, out of respect for you guys, I would like to stay for your set and give you an audience. Like, especially if we talked about it beforehand and we're hanging out, like, I hated dipping early, but I had to because, I mean, I had to get back to the kids and the wife and get up early and stuff. So.
You know, we knew your plight, so we were happy for you.
No one ever gave me trouble about it, just, you know, I
like
just kind of...
Like that jerk Chris Hobart leaving again, shit.
And that's a pretty unique thing for at least our scene, is that it's the comedy show.
Yeah.
Like, there's not, you know, in any big city or big scene, there's multiple shows every night, and it's like you might catch somebody coming to, leaving, and you just kind of move, and you keep rotating.
Yeah,
but for us,
one
it's
show
like,
of the night.
Yeah,
this is the only thing that's happening.
This is the gig, so.
There's no mic hopping here.
Right.
You get on one, and you're done. We have good crowds, though. I think the crowds here are so much better than, like, the other cities. The only, like, smart... I've been to open mics in, like, Houston, Austin... It's somewhere else probably, in Austin, the smartest thing I saw was they had one of those meetup things for like grownups, and they put it at an open mic. So it's all these like young professionals and stuff, and like
worst
open mic. Oh man, the meetup lasted like 2 hours, and like there was one guy that was like drinking and was like enjoying it, but everybody else was just like, oh, like clearly like they were traumatized by hearing this homeless lady talk about how. Like, I don't know what she's talking. Some weird homeless thing she was doing.
It's hard to clip her toenails or something.
You know what I mean, but
why didn't you let me sleep in your driveway? What the fuck?
Yeah, it was like. And my buddy that does comedy there, he was like, no, she's for real homeless. I was like, oh, dude, makes it a lot less funny now. Like, if you would think it when you saw her, but it wasn't like, you know.
I've been to a lot of young professionals things and stuff, so I can only be on that end where I could actually make jokes about him and be like, she's not gonna go home with you, dude. Just like. Get your shit out of here.
It was the whole thing was just a crapshoot. It was so bad watching their thing just implode. Like, it started out like, hey, like the first set to like comedy, and by like the fifth there was like, get us out. Like, is it over? Like, you can get
how obligated do we have to stay here before we can use our free drink coupons?
It was genius. You got a great crowd, but oh my gosh, did they ruin it with
the
set
apps
list.
Come out?
Yeah.
They do
half of them left before that. Like, there was a lot of uneaten food sitting around on these. There was like three tables full of people at the start.
Yeah, maybe it was like a strategy from the people that were putting it on. It's like, we're out of money, so we're going to go to an open mic and run half the group off so we can pay for the apps at the end of the night.
Oh,
so.
That homeless girl's probably not eating it all up.
Yeah. Put her up first.
I'm going to take the rest of this.
Tell them about your homelessness.
Right. Oh, Jesus. What do you do? I'm homeless. Oh, okay. You here for the I'm here for.
Oh, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I'm about it.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. So, what company do you work for? Homelessness.
The bridge.
So, Chris, we always like to start, because this is a celebration of starting out. What got you into going to your first open mic? Like, what decided that you were like, I'm going to go up and tell jokes?
So, I wrote my first joke probably about 6 months before that. I was like, oh, this is going to work. And then my best friend, Nick, started doing it in Austin. And he would just, he's a good storyteller, and he would tell me these stories about it. And they just sounded like so fun. Like, whoa, there's all these weird people there. And it's just... Man, there's these guys, like, he told me about this, like, Indian kid that was, like, young, professional-looking kid, and he goes in there, he's got all the swag, all the confidence in the world. He's like, man, this guy's going to crush. And the
His name was Kumail Nanjiani, and I was kidding.
Oh, no, it definitely wasn't. Apparently, this guy, like, goes up there and literally just made, like, dick jokes for 5 and just died up there, like... Didn't get a single laugh, but had all the confidence and swagger and was just like, I'm crushing, you know. And he just gets off, like slams a shot and leaves. And Nick was like, that was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, thank
God he's done.
Yeah.
He like, leaves well, like, I'm amazing.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That's
got them.
That's a very, I feel like that's a very unique trait of comedians yeah. is like they can just eat shit. And then so like very few of them actually like. I don't know. It's like our self yeah. have that
high
much self-awareness.
Confidence. Yeah. And like, yeah. Yeah. High I'll confidence and no self-awareness.
I mean, like, there's a rush. Like, after you've done it a couple times, you get that rush of adrenaline going up, and just like that alone, I guess, can carry some people. Like, for me, I was so nervous. I was like, I can't go up there and bomb. I can't bomb. And I mean, now it's like, it happens. It sucks, but, you know, move over. But at the time, it's like the end of the world. Like, oh my gosh, if I. Oh, these people, they're going to tell my grandma or something, you know, like, yeah, the whole world's going to know I'm not funny and all this, I don't know, there's this stuff in your head. So that's why it took me 6 months to actually get up there, because I heard the interesting stories, and I was like, well, if, you know, at least if I bomb, I may get a cool story or something. And I mean, I probably did bomb. I don't remember. It was all a blur, you know?
That's what a lot of people do, though. So it's just like, I'm going to try and do this. And, like, it's like, worst case scenario, I get a good story. It's like, you remember that one time I did stand-up comedy? And, like, I did that joke about Nazis, and I got, like, thrown off the stage or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
I can't go back to Adolf's?
What? Oh, no.
Why?
No, but I wrote out the whole set. So I read two books on comedy before I went up, and I wrote out my set, and I had it like word for word, like, this is going to work. This is going to be so good. And it all just went out the window when I went up there, and I'd rehearsed it. I'd done all that. And yeah.
Do you think like the anticipation of making sure you got it right gave you like a little bit more anxiety going up there to be like, I've got to nail this.
Being technical about it or whatever.
But I had no experience. So
right.
Like,
that's like a weird.
Read.
Yeah. It's weird to put that much pressure on yourself, but I mean, I get where you're coming from, and like, I've seen how you work and like how meticulous you are and like getting everything right.
So I wanted to at least go in with a game plan. I didn't want to go up there and be like, well, let's talk about, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like the Holocaust treating everybody, you know, like just, I don't want to just go up there and die. Like I wanted to create something, I guess, and put effort into it. Because I feel like if I put effort into something, I'm going to do well, like, no matter what it is. And so I just felt like if I tried, even though, I mean, I don't have, like, the it factor for comedy. I know that. I've been up enough that it's like, yeah, I would have killed by now if I had it. But I can write jokes, okay? And if I put effort in, I can actually make stuff funny.
Like, I don't want to speak for Caleb, but I think we're both like that. It's just like, we have to work at it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, it's just like, I walk up and say whatever the fuck I want. And what was it? Sinbad has like the big comment of like, he's never bombed or whatever. I'm like, I don't believe you, Sinbad, but I love your confidence in the fact that like you can walk up and say.
Sinbad definitely believes that. Like,
Well, does he count as movies? Those are fucking bombs.
Those count? Can we count those?
Are you getting all that effort into there?
Yeah, because what was that? I don't even remember, but they're like all run into one movie. It's like Sinbad shows up.
I love
and hangs out with
the
kids.
One Sinbad movie. I love is House Guest with Phil Hartman or whatever.
That's the one I'm talking about.
That one's fun. I like that one.
The whole joke is that he's just this giant guy and befriends tiny people the whole time. Like, hey, little man.
Yeah.
Want to hang with Sinbad?
My favorite part of that movie is like is the friend he's faking to be and stuff, and like and he just turns out to be this jerk like the dentist. Guy, and he's just like, you're Kevin Franklin, you're his oldest friend. It's like, well, I am now because you suck. Yeah, my real friend's terrible, But all right, so we so you brought us a live set. It's obviously not your first set, but like, where is that? Can you give us a little like context on this guy?
Yes, so we found another set, but it was so bad I refused to bring it because it was. I just died. I was.
You know that's the part of the show, though. We want. That's what we want.
This one.
We like Paul last week. Like talked about. It's just like it's like I say the hard R or whatever. Much. I'm like, okay, we probably don't want that. You know, in this light mind. So if you said that, then we'll pass on your Aryan Brotherhood set. Like
that's not what I led with on this one. It's just. Oh man, the parts I listen to is just such a bomb, and my first jokes were just so awful. I never want to repeat them. I have like a list of jokes in my phone that I have written, and they aren't even in it because I was just like, they're gone. They're just
you are literally talking about what this show's about, and that's what we want. So, well, we will take what you get.
I will leave it to the imagination. So this set is from December of 2016. So I've been doing comedy about 7 months at this point.
Okay.
So it was a headline. No, not headline. Showcase show. Yeah, it was a showcase show at local bar here in Lubbock. The audio is complete garbage.
Oh, I was going to bring that up because I listened to 4 minutes of that, and I was just like, this audio is terrible. But it was at the local, right?
Yes.
And
it
yes,
actually sounds better here than live.
We had talked about how terrible that room was for audio. Oh, it's just like it's a nightmare.
Yeah,
like, I mean, nothing wrong with the establishment itself, but like the room to do comedy is just acoustically, terrible.
It was just like made...
It was no good.
Oh, terrible, yeah.
You take what you can get out here, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, the people there were nice, and, and I mean, I never had a bad time there, but the only problem, people like, craning their necks to, like, hear you, like, huh? I was like, oh, I don't want to repeat it. Like, jokes just worked the first time. I can't.
All right, well, so this is the local from 2016. This is a long set, so get ready, people.
Jesus turned water into wine, but he doesn't really have to make much of Lubbock. Our water's so hard, it's harder for most liquors. Lubbock water is so hard, gay guys using it as their grinder profile picture. But it's time to live it up, y'all. Stephen Hawking said we may have less than 1,000 years left to live on Earth. Or he may just be mad he can't walk. I don't know which. I got that from my Facebook news, so it's got to be true. Kind of miss MySpace with all the Facebook shenanigans going on. Anybody still have MySpace?
Me.
No, you don't. The only people that still have MySpace and haven't deleted it are dead people or necrophiliacs. It's like a dating website for them. Oh, man. I am a dating app, though. It's a dating app for transgender. It's trying to get back to the dating scene. It's kind of like Tinder, but it's called Blender. Still in the beta phase, though, it's a little mixed up. It's got this glitch where sometimes when you swipe through the profile pictures, the gender just changes without warning. Still trying to straighten all that out.
If you can see Hobart's face right now.
These are punched up.
I think Dennis Rodman is primed for a comeback in the WNBA. I mean, his career could really use a rebound. And he's got a pretty sick crossover. I don't see why 4K athletes don't use that to their advantage, you know? Like, to throw their opponent off and just pop a Viagra before they go out there and play some stiff defense. That helped to create some space, make it more of a deep threat. They can penetrate to the hole. But really, though, a boner is the most offensive weapon you can have, so... Why you wouldn't use it. You guys know there's a lot of gay doctors in Lubbock? Yeah, they keep telling me I need vitamin D. Nice try. Sorry, that was a lot of gay jokes. In my defense, though, I do have a condition. I'm what's called an internal homophobe. So, like, I don't care if you're gay, I just care if you think I'm gay. Then I'm uncomfortable. Which is bad because sometimes I take, like, really... really girthy boobs. Like, very suspiciously girthy. Like, no straight man should be able to push this out without an epidural. It's bad, because one time I was at a girl's house. I was post-coital. I used the restroom. And I just took the girthiest dump ever and fucked it up. It looked like Gary Coleman's leg was stuck in the toilet. So I freaked out. I was like, oh my gosh, this girl's gonna think I'm gay. The girl that I just had sex with. She probably does think I'm gay. Anyways, restroom time to me is very sacred. I like a clean restroom. It really bothers me when it's not on the par. Because I never know when I'm about to spend 30 minutes in a Denny's restroom pushing out a grand slam. Yeah. But my biggest pet peeve ever is just guys that pee on toilet seats. I don't mind a couple stray bullets. Can wipe that off. But the real artists, the real painters, you know, give it that yellow hue. Because I don't want my poop to feel like I'm giving water birth. That's really gross. So I actually created an invention to fix that. It's like, you know, those trash cans where you push the pedal and it opens the lid. It's like that for a toilet seat. Push it, the lid comes up. Genius, right? But my invention would never work. Because the guy would go in there, he'd start peeing on the toilet seat, see my pedal, pee on the pedal, get bored, go back to peeing on the toilet seat, get a little curious and start pumping the pedal, and then just splash the whole place. It would look like lemonade standard running into the pools. You know what invention I'm surprised hasn't really caught on yet? Flavored condoms. Like, why are all condoms flavored condoms? Because without it, it's going to be dick flavored. That's gross. I'm just saying, I've smelled mine from 2 feet away, and I lost my appetite. Can't imagine. I've always wondered, when they taste test those condoms, they just have it like on a sushi platter? Or they get the full meal, you know? Full experience. Bon appetit. Asking for a friend. I think a lot of stupid stuff. I used to think the guys with one ball could only make midgets if they had sex. They didn't have the full testicular fusion to make a full-size human being and just get like halfway there. So you can imagine how surprised I was when I saw double penetration for the first time. I thought they were trying to make a giant. Why else would you put two dicks in there at the same time? Rude. Well, why wouldn't wait your turn, guy number three? Ruined it for everybody. There's some weird people out there. I think a big red flag is if a guy is ever interested in pigtails, like that's his thing. Because that's like a little bit pedo curious. You know what I mean? He might ask you if you have a daughter. It's bad. This joke's not going to work. I'm just going to skip where that was going.
Skip.
You guys know how there's that whole LGBTQ, WXYZ, you know, whatever that is. Y'all notice there's no F in there for the foot people? They don't get a letter.
I remember the foot.
Fighting for their rights. I don't know, I thought that was weird. Way to kick them while they're down. You know, they probably like that. But the foot people do like to keep a pretty low profile. Like, the only time you're ever excited to find out that someone has a foot fetish is if they're like, you're bound, you're gagged, you're in the back of someone's trunk, then they just fuck your feet and leave. That's been a lot worse. Like, you're never excited, you're like, hey man, how was your date with Amber? Going great, man, I had sex with her feet.
Well, we just got a, hey, what's going on?
So, I found out that my wife is really superstitious. She said we should get some blackout curtains for the house. I told her to just lock the windows. We live in a pretty nice neighborhood. No racist joke.
You even it.
I found out that my mother-in-law.
At least you said it.
I
was like, this is a racist joke.
Sad. He's like a reverse comfort animal. You have to like pet him and be nice, or else he might kill himself. I hate the whole idea of comfort animals, though. Like, you need a pet dog to help you ride an airplane or ride on a bus. It's stuff I did when I was 7 years old. If someone's like not stable enough to do that, then they can have an animal that can bite, pee, and poop. Just try to keep them company while they struggle through life. Just sounds awful. Like, I need a comfort animal that preys on weaker comfort animals to make me more like comfortable with my masculinity. That made me feel good. Anybody ever been so high they tried to make a cat laugh? Save you the time, it doesn't work.
I used to work in retail. We had a lady, she came by and she asked, hey, can you sell a toothbrush that shoots water out of the end? They said, no. She's like, do you know why you don't have it? I said, no. She said, that's because I just invented it. I'm like, shit. Sorry, we didn't stock this thing you just made out. But I do have a business venture. It's a cigarette delivery company. So if someone tries to bum a cigarette from you late at night, you can just give them the card and say, hey, you just call them and they'll deliver the cards. It's smart. That make a killing. It'll make a lot of killings. Slowly over time. All the cancer. So, you guys hear that Trump's going to make a list of all the Muslims? I'm just saying, a real president would have just used drones. I got one more than I do. So I love America. I love that we win the Olympics every year. Like, we just smash every country. It's not even close. It's awesome. I enjoy it. I think we need more sports in the Olympics. Like, we need competitive eating so we can beat all the hungry companies. Like, what happened? Ethiopia? I thought you were hungry. We're not hungry. We're Czechoslovakia. Thank you so much. I'll have you back.
Geographic joke at the end to sign it off.
Thought you were hungry.
Hungary.
Thought you were hungry.
This is Czechoslovakia.
Oh man,
I feel like the only thing that was
nine minutes of fire there.
Yeah. Oh god. I feel like the only thing that was missing was like some like voice coming over the speakers, like announcing where the subway was going to take people. It's like, This is the next stop. It just was sounding like a crowded public transit.
Yeah, yeah. The audio on that was terrible for sure.
Yeah, like, there really were people there. And you heard good pockets of laughter in there.
Yeah. A lot of, from the people filming the video, they really liked what you were doing.
Yeah, it was all my wife's friends. They came to support, so that helps.
So how did you feel about that set?
I feel good about it, to be honest. I mean, it... like I said, I found the other one that I found was just so bad. So, this one is a bit more polished up, but you can tell that I had worked on the pauses. I'd worked on, you know, the wording, making sure you got to the punchline and stuff like that. Yeah. Like the delivery, I think, was pretty good as far as I can get, I guess.
Yeah, I guarantee. Yeah, it was pretty punched up. I was impressed.
You took some chances in that, which I liked a lot. Like some of those, I can't remember. I had what I was going to talk about, and I just lost it. So I'm going to throw it to Caleb on this.
I'm just curious about the girthy dump joke that you have.
Oh, gosh.
I just love the word girthy. It's just such a good, like,
that is a solid word. Yeah.
And like, jokey, like, word. You know, it just, I don't know. It just kind of pulled it, just pulled it home for at least the joke, because it's like there's so many different things that you could say when you were like girth, because it's obviously like associated with like dick and shit, so it's like it's pretty funny.
I guess I could throw the word thick in there. It just gets a little too weird, but girthy, just like it leaves an imprint, you know. It's like, they know what I'm trying to say.
That was pretty good, especially for, you know, still in your first year of developing. You can tell that the work that you put into studying it, punching stuff up, I mean, it pays off. I mean, it really does. So, and you had a solid MySpace necrophiliac joke. I mean, I think that's the best.
My favorite thing was calling out the girl about the MySpace thing. And she's like, MySpace. Was like, no, you don't. Fuck you.
No, get out of my joke.
Yeah, it's like, I don't believe you.
Anybody
like,
you still have MySpace?
Yeah.
No, you don't. Well, then you're necrophiliac. Yeah.
Because I mean,
one of two categories.
That's right.
That room itself. I mean, like to talk about where we were at in that situation, like that, like because like you would only be able, if you were there, you could only the first couple tables and like maybe the first half of the bar would hear what you were saying, and then the rest of that room was just so gone, you wouldn't be able to hear it. So the fact that you just went up there and just kept doing it, like. Because I had been up there on that stage and be like, it was like these people aren't fucking listening to me, and then just kind of like bail out almost.
I hate just, you know, you tell a joke and you just hear nothing but the same like barroom noise, like yada, yeah,
chatter, yeah. Chatter, the bar like, chatter's the worst.
Did you guys, I had a punchline.
Yeah. Like, dang is it. Anyone following me?
Anybody listening?
Yeah, there's like one table in the corner. It's like, we love you. It's like, I mean, like if I have to focus on you guys, it just ruins it for me. If it's just one table, you know? Like, yeah. But now I mean, that was a good set. I thought like, in adversity, like that was great. Like, because I know the room and I know how bad that area is. After that, like, did you feel like, do you feel after you're doing that, you're just like, it's like, that was a good set. I had fun. I had a good time.
Yeah, no, that felt was a great set that night. Probably one of my better ones throughout the whole time I've done it, honestly, because, I mean, you can hear it. And there was, they were really following me that night. I mean, I've probably done better, but to me, that's one of the top ones.
Yeah.
Just that I remember anyway. I mean, I don't know.
You could tell like you were just bang, 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 bang. You just rolled through. It was impressive.
Yeah.
I did want to comment the times that we do get Chris out are occasionally like for like special shows, like holiday shows. Well,
now it's like Chris Hobart being out is a special show. So
right. Anytime he like, comes out, it's we're like
oh yeah! Shit, Hobart's here. I want to hear what Hobart has to talk about. You know, like
I'm always working on new stuff. I got some new, I told Caleb a couple the other day.
Yeah, he's got some stuff up his sleeve.
They're okay.
But there was a couple of like holiday shows that you showed up to and just had like a set that was just for.
Oh, the holiday thing.
Yeah, that's really enjoyable for at least.
Oh, the Chris Hobart Christmas there was a Halloween show too. You were dressed up like a knightsman or some shit. Or
yeah,
you did a whole set like based on like in that in that vernacular of can you explain that?
Yeah, like, it was freaking awesome.
That was a great.
My best friend's birthday was in Austin in July, I bought it was a medieval thing, and they had a bunch of everyone dressed up as like a, I don't know what you call them, like a peasant or a lord or a jester or something. And I forget, like his sister's boyfriend was like, a knight, and she was a queen. I forgot who he was. But I wore this little like tunic with little gray pants that were like hiked up, you know, like I'd been walking in the mud or something. And it just, I loved it so much because I kept saying, pardons, my lords.
Yes.
Care for a drink of the mead? Because he brought mead, and I'd never drinking mead before, so I just had a great time hanging out with them. And I was playing Pictionary or something with his mom and all their friends, and I was doing it in character.
Yeah.
And just questioning what everything was, like, what is this contraption? Everything, like, it's like a door. Like, you had doors back then, Chris. I've never seen such a thing.
A barn door?
Oh,
like, it's a drawbridge?
What are these things? Is this where you drive a horse? You know, just being like super, but it was funny. And I mean, after a while, it was like, I could tell they were mildly annoyed, so I stopped, but it was so fun just to be like, just annoying, like a townsman.
Yeah.
Commenting on everything I see, like, oh, what a surprise. So I wanted to do that for the Halloween special, and I just wrote all the jokes. Like, the jokes I already did, but I did them in that vernacular that kind of worked. And
it was hilarious. Like, we had so much fun seeing that. Like,
yeah, he just rolled in, and we were like, everyone's dressed up, and then Chris just rolls out full character.
Telling jokes, yes.
It was fantastic.
That was a good one. That was fun.
So that was good, man. Like, that was a fun time. And we're going to get in the questions part of this, which is always so much fun. And it's always good to hang out. Like, so, Chris Hobart, I know you were friends. I know you as a very responsible person. And I don't want to get too much into your personal life, but like you work as a pharmacist, and like I want to know. My question is, what is the weirdest thing that ever someone walked up to you as being a pharmacist and asked for you to give them?
There's a lot of like, there's some stuff that like just if you work in medical terms, you're like, yeah, you were in the wrong place. But I mean, recently it's just been idiots walking in the store and be like, hey, I'm here for a COVID test. I'm like, no, you're not. Go away. Like,
get like, the fuck out of here.
I can't it's give bad. You this. Yeah. Sorry.
We did COVID tests for a little while, but we had signs everywhere like, do not enter the store. Like, cannot stress this enough. Like, you need to stay in your car. We'll bring in the test. So that happens like three or four times a week right now. But I guess the worst thing, I think, pharmacy-wise, is this lady. This is when I worked at CVS in Houston, Texas. And this lady came. I worked at a 24-hour store. I was in the ghetto. That store got robbed a lot. Ghetto. Luckily, I wasn't there. It was it was bad.
Goodness.
And, like, weirdly racially segregated. Very weird. This was near, like, Sharpstown, which is, like, where all the Asians lived. And there was Brerwood, where all the Jews lived. And then there was a Mexican community. I'm talking, like, separated to the point where the street signs were in Chinese for this Asian community. Okay. Like, it was very ethnically, like, you're here, you're here. And I was like, it's so weird that this happened all around this one CVS I work at. Because it was literally, like, the CVS was the tipping point. And then around, like, the, you know, Lubbock zip codes go and they're all over. Yeah.
You're the point. Little, yeah. You're, like, center the points. Point.
We'll start here and build races out from here. And that's what we're going to. It was really like that. It was weird. Like, which direction did their car come from? Like, oh, it's an Asian person. Like, what? How? Like, I mean, I only worked there for, like, 8 months or something. But, yeah, you could kind of figure it out. And this lady comes in one time, and she had a prescription. She pulls it out from under her titty.
Oh, yeah.
And guess what that script's for? Ketoconazole cream to treat fungus under titty.
Oh, my God.
That's and the best ever.
Like a, like a... It was a soggy script, too. I mean, just like... Oh, that thing.
It was a soggy script. It's a great tagline for like any kind of joke that like you're at a wedding or whatever. It's like, it was a soggy strip. I'm a pharmacist.
Dude, we could have baked that script into a loaf of bread and had so much yeast on it.
Holy shit. Do you think like in her mind like that like the doctor was like, "All right, this is for the drug that's going to
stop
that's
putting
gonna,
things under your titties.
That makes your titty itch." Yeah. And she's like, "This is what the doctor gave me to stop my titty itching." So they put the paper under there. She's like, "My titty's still itching."
Yeah. How about we give this to the next doctor? Here we go. Titty script next.
I don't have a purse or pockets. Where the fuck do you want me to do? Carry it in your fucking hand, you lunatic?
They couldn't have given the script to more discreet. Like, there was this little girl that took it, and she's just like, "Hey guys, I'm not gonna touch this anymore. We have a real issue here."
You know, she brought it up very professionally.
Yeah, it's like, "What happened?" She's like, "She has a fungus under her breast, and that's where she's hiding the prescription."
Oh my God!
Oh wow!
She's like straight to the facts, within like, ah,
wow,
like just oh man. CVS, fill it and sell it, guy.
Well, here we go.
I got you. I got your titty script covered.
Yeah. Oh, I got the titty script.
What? Oh, this little thing. Oh man, yeah. So that was definitely the weirdest interaction.
That was like, because I feel like as like a person that likes to put out prescriptions and stuff, it's like you have to have people, just random people coming up to you. It's just like, I need a prescription for hereditary. I'm like, that's not a thing. Yeah. So.
No, you kind of heard it in that set I did, but I talked about the lady with the toothbrush invention. Yeah. She thinks she invented, which she didn't. But I guess that story is not that funny, but it's funnier if you know the backstory. Is that lady had been, so this is a 24-hour CVS I worked at. She had been in that store since 5 a.m. that morning, and this was at 7 at night. She had literally been shopping in a circle.
Jesus Christ.
How many hours is that? 7 plus about 14 hours of shopping, in a CVS. Not eating. Yeah, in a CVS. She had been in the store the entire, I got in that shift, I think, at 1 o'clock. And usually when I go into one, I'm there till 10 or 11 because it's like a 24-hour, and I was a technician at the time. And yeah, she had been there for like a solid 14 hours at least at this point, and had just been asking like random questions like, "Hey, excuse me, this Chef Boyardee has sodium in it? Is this a good amount of sodium?" Like,
this chef,
140%. It's over 100% of sodium. I was like, "It's fine. It's salt. Just take it.
Ma'am. Get the Chef Boyardee and get the fuck out of here."
But I just have a nice demeanor with people, and I was like, "Oh man, I think you're gonna be just fine with the Chef Boyardee."
Yeah,
you know, it's I kept a good doing choice. Stuff. And she's like, "You're such a nice
Boyardee
boy."
Knows. Yeah. Boyardee, if anybody knows,
Boyardee knows what the chef. Fuck's going on. Yeah.
The chef is in his name, ma'am. I would trust the amount of sodium that Chef puts inside.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. Boyardee. Don't question the chef.
Don't fuck with Chef Bede. BRD. What?
Okay, I got a. Since this is a first stage podcast, I was wondering if there might be any other firsts, because you seem kind of like, I don't know, it's like, you know, you're I know you, so there's like, you're kind of like a Renaissance man. You do like some, you do all sorts of shit, and it's like really, really impressive that you've got like a nice, like, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this. It's like, you know, you've done a great job. And you like,
great job.
It's like, you know, this guy's a good person and has been living life pretty solid. So it's like, you know, you got any good shit with that on just like other things that, you know, that piqued your interest and you committed to doing it and you just fucking did it.
Yeah, I've made some really bad choices is another way to put that.
Yeah.
The first thing that comes to mind is I was an amateur boxer, like with the state, like I joined.
I'm loving this right now.
Like, what was I, like 26 or something? I don't know. And I joined as an amateur boxer. I just did it because it was a bucket list thing. And I was in pharmacy school and I was in really good shape when I went into pharmacy because I had been training for an MMA fight. And MMA and boxing, any fighting sport is sketchy no matter what. Like there's good dudes in it. Don't get me wrong. But when it comes to setting up fights, it is absolutely a total crapshoot. It's so sketchy.
But you were going in boxing and like you're like MMA boxing. I'm like if you're only doing boxing, should you just do the boxing?
Yeah,
and
that's
not
what
the,
I did to train. Because
the MMA, it's like oh, I'll do someone MMA or boxing. I'm like the MMA guy would kick the shit out of you because you got extra skills. Let me just take the boxing guy.
I trained MMA for like 2 or 3 years before this. So I trained for a while and I was training at an MMA gym and they had an opportunity for a Golden Gloves boxing competition. So I was like, this is great. I'll invite all my friends from school. You know, so I packed the house. Yeah, and it happened to be on Cinco de Mayo, and we had a cardio, which cardio is your hardest class second year of pharmacy school. We had that exam the next day. And this was like a study break for everybody. I was like, hey, I'll talk to this guy.
Sorry.
Hold, there's can so we many stop? Signs.
Can we stop here? He's like, cardio class is your hardest in pharmacy school. Explain that, please.
Okay. Cardio is like just the heart, everything about the heart medication.
Okay, so
how
he was talking about,
talking about
the working technical
out,
side
and then
of
he
this.
Thought it was like a big workout day.
No, it is cardiology. It is not cardio. It's cardiology. Yeah.
Sorry. I was on the same page as Aaron. You had like this huge test and they make pharmacists like pass no.
pharmacists.
Cardio
it's time to, really fuck with each other. And like that's what I thought.
CBS were swarmed 9 hours straight of doing prescriptions.
Hit the wall.
Burpees.
Here we go.
Yeah, no. Burpees.
No,
don't let
was,
that prescription touch the ground.
Yeah. Hold that plank.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No, it was it was a heart test, basically.
For their brains, not their actual
hearts. Yeah, not their actual physical.
We had
physical
to study other people's hearts. A little different. So that's very hard. Actually, there's actually a specialty, cardiologist, if you will. So yeah, I'm not one, but I had to study as if I was one, and it was very tough. That was the next day, and it was that Monday. I'm sorry. This happened on Saturday. I think Cinco de Mayo was a Saturday that year. Anyways, we were studying for that. It was like our last final, and I was like, this can't go that bad. I was supposed to box this guy from Las Vegas, New Mexico. Not Vegas,
yeah.
Las Vegas, New Mexico.
Oh, yeah. I can kick
and,
some people's ass in Las
he was,
Vegas.
He was what I was told is that he was a 6'1" black guy that had a 1-0 record, and he basically gassed in his last fight, and he basically just took it to decision. But he's a brawler, and he'd be, you know, it'd be an even match with me because I had some training before. I'd trained boxing, I trained MMA.
Were you concerned about fighting a, you know, it sounds like he's a bigger guy than you.
Yeah, he'd have reach on me, but I mean, my fighting style is you kind of get in and do combos and get out. So it would have been a fair fight with this guy. You know, maybe he'd beat me, probably would. Yeah. But I mean, you know, they said, like, you know what, you've got a little more cardio than him. You've got a little more experience. Your punches are a little crisper. It should be a fair fight. I was like, okay, you know, that sounds fine with me. So I get there and go to the weigh-ins. My blood pressure is super high. It's like 170 over something. They're like, yeah, you're fine. Just go fight. So I go in, I find my boxing coach, and I'm like, hey, man, I brought like literally like 40 people from the pharmacy school came, like no less than 40. And there's only about 80 people there. Yeah. They had nothing else to do. We were in Amarillo at this time. And they were just like, well, we'll go watch Chris and then we'll go back. So like I had at least 40 people there out of the 80 in attendance. So I brought half the freaking crowd.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like I go up to the boxing, I'm like, hey, man, where am I on the list? He's like, I got you second to last. I was like, dude, my people are not going to stay here for 2.5 hours. Like, I need to go now. Like, you need to put me, like, stat. Like, look at the crowd. They paid to be in. They're all, like, getting mad and going to leave. Like, you got to help me out here. And he's like, oh. Because I was like, remember you promised me I could go first if I brought a lot of people? He's like, Yeah, this poor guy. He's great boxing coach, everything, but at this
sounds
time,
like he's like losing on this promotion right now.
Well, no, you'll find out later what had happened, what was on his mind. He was just like, oh, I'll just put you second. Just like you could tell, he was overwhelmed with everything.
He knew
that
you were gonna get your ass kicked. Is that what it was?
Yes,
like,
because
he's like, he
freaking knew what he did to me. He knew what he did to me, but I didn't know what he'd done to me. I was like, come on, let's just go, let's get the fight going. Hey, and I'm just like,
I can kick this guy's ass, whatever.
So they got two little kids fighting. They're like, all right, we'll push you up, you'll be right at this fight. Are you sure about this? I was like, yes, man. They need to leave. Like, let's get it over with. I'm like, okay. Like, all right. So there was only one guy there that met the description of a 6'1" black guy. And I find him like, hey man, I'm Chris. I think we're fighting. He's like, no, I'm your trainer. I was like, who am I fighting? Like, oh, you're fighting Robert the Colonel Sanders. I was like, what the
Colonel?
What a great name.
I was like, he gets a nickname? I have a nickname.
Robert, his name, the Colonel. Was his name Ronald Sanders?
No, Robert.
Oh, okay. I knew a Ronald Sanders in high school, and that guy was gigantic black guy. So I was like, wait, you fought Ronald Sanders?
Oh, shit.
Well, this guy is no better. Robert the Colonel Sanders was undefeated boxer. He was Golden Gloves, I believe. And he was set to fight this other guy from Amarillo that was from my gym that was also undefeated. And they were like, this guy, John Cook in Amarillo, he was a Terminator, and he never lost a fight, MMA or boxing. He knocked everyone out.
John Cook, the Terminator?
Yeah. He had knocked everyone out in the first round, never lost a fight, all amateur. And they're like, hey, we're going to bring you a good fight in Lubbock. Well, John Cook had fought the week before, and it ended up being a tougher fight for him. Still knocked the guy out in the first round, but he was like, hey, I need to recover. I don't think I'm going to do that boxing match. Okay, my guy from Vegas didn't show either.
So you didn't fight the Terminator?
What? I don't know all this is happening.
Dude,
I'm just like, here...
Like, this guy sounds like a boss you would face like that Nintendo game.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
So here comes the Colonel.
Keep in mind, this is my first fight. Like, I've never had a boxing match, and I'm expected to fight another guy with one fight. And it's like, oh, that'll be just a slugfest. It's whatever. We'll be boys. Like, it's fine. No, they put me up against the Colonel, who has like an undefeated Golden Glove streak and like all this stuff. Who was supposed to fight this other guy.
Damn.
But the rest of the fighters were all little kids. So there's like, who's he gonna fight? Like, how about that white guy? Like, we'll just put him against Chris because it's they weigh the same.
Well, let's put the Chris out there. So how did that fight go?
Well, I think what was happening was I was really pushy on my trainer. I was like, dude, you gotta give me the fight second. You gotta give me the fight. And I remember his face just like was white, and he's like scared.
He's like, why do I want this white boy to die on me right now?
But I think he was overwhelmed with like running the whole thing himself. He was like, oh yeah, man, we'll put you up. Good luck. I needed it because this guy beat the living shit out of me for three rounds.
Oh,
like,
you lasted
three?
Is there a video of that?
There's plenty of video.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh.
All 40 people.
Patreon when we get that set up.
No,
so
most
Patreon
of them have
for
been
the
deleted.
Podcast.
But yeah, you can hear my girlfriend at the time screaming and crying and like I'm bleeding
Chris,
everywhere.
Just go down.
Chris, just go down.
I got him with one shot in the third and he just shrugged it off and beat me up even more. It was so bad.
Shit.
But like the thing was like I start warming up and I was like I'm a little like Richard Simmonsy like this guy they're looking at me like I look up I'm like I got it guys no they're seeing him on the other side I can't see him over there it's just boom boom like just Draco just like
oh man
like screaming
so, like,
at his coach
right. So like what I'm seeing in my head is it a big giant black guy in front of you
you
would go box
just like a ripped white guy. Who has a
ripped
shirt
white guy.
That
okay.
says USA?
He's the Colonel.
It says USA Boxing.
Does he have a mustache?
No, he has a shirt that says USA Boxing. He has pants that say USA Boxing. Shoes that say USA Boxing. He is decked out, like ready to go. Like
he's
certified. Not,
he's getting paid, apparently.
Oh no, he's like repping it hard, and he was so serious. And just like ready to just demolish me, and he did. It was not close. I remember the first thing he did. Like the main, all he had to do with me was just a 1-2-3. I'm sure he had more skills than that, but it worked, so he just kept doing it. He was going 1-2-3, 1-2-3.
Do you feel bad that you lost that like boxing match based on like skill level? Or you're just like, no, like he out like punched me, or is it like he was gonna
beat
me?
Dude,
our
skill levels were so not close. This guy's way out of my league. I should not have been boxing him in the
first
place.
So you were a rope a dope kind of guy, like come in.
Well,
and,
it
like,
wasn't like no one was like, hey, let's
beat the shit out of this
guy,
and then we're good.
No, what happened was. His opponent didn't show up. Mine didn't show up. They just put us together.
Yeah,
nobody told me, like, his last name?
What was his first name?
Robert Sanders. I met him at he's from Lubbock, and I met him at a bar in Lubbock and had a drink with him like 2 years later. I was like, "You remember me?" He's like, "No." I was like, "You beat the shit out of me." He's like,
"Don't you remember
sorry,
me?"
Dude, because he trains out the boxing club here. He was a nice dude afterwards. I mean, yeah, during the fight
I'd
too.
I'd be nice too if I beat the shit out of him.
I mean, no, he was cool.
It's good
dude.
To see
I mean,
you. Thanks for kicking my ass. I'm
well,
sorry.
No, I mean like 2 years afterwards, he was like, "Oh man, yeah, what was going on with that fight?" he was like,
"So was that your last fight?" Like
yeah,
fight.
Done
fight,
on that,
like,
yeah,
and then I'm like, I'm not a boxer anymore.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
Doing stand-up comedy. Here we go.
Yep. I've considered. There's a new sport. It's not caught on in America, but it's called chess boxing, and it's pretty big overseas.
Okay.
So I'm very good at chess. I'm almost a chess master, and I've played chess for over 30 years. I've boxed for quite a while. I'm completely out of shape now. But I would love to. Like,
so when that. You when you play chess boxing, is it like
I saw him.
You saw?
He looks very ferocious.
Yes, yeah, he is. No, he is all business in the fucking ring, man. Yeah. He was all business in there. And I'm lucky. I got a standing eight count, but I didn't get knocked out. He knocked me, and like literally, he hit me so hard that my body was going down, but my vision was going up. It's hard to explain. It's exactly like in Fight Night. You ever played Fight Night and you get knocked out and you start looking at the ceiling, but you can tell your body's falling. It was exactly like that. I was just like losing it and falling. But I kept my ground, and the ref was like, oh, the ref could tell I was like really messed up. And the ref was.
There's one where you can see like his reach.
Did he count you out or he just count yourself out? You're like,
No. He started counting. And I.
The white guy with the reach. That looks like fun.
That's
the white guy.
Yeah, that's the guy. I fought.
That's the guy that beat him. Okay.
Yeah.
So I saw like for
his
the
arm
people,
looks like a fucking leg.
He hit me with that
it's
all
a,
day.
It's
I did
it's
nothing
a huge
to stop
reach.
He's a big white guy.
He got destroyed like on
a
big white guy. Like
I think he took it easy on me, to be honest. Like
so, like my main question is like, did you beat people up like in high school? Like where? What made you want to get into fighting in general? Was it just like you just wanted to like defend yourself and then you got into
cool,
it? Or
man, like I just loved watching UFC and seeing and then training. Like when I trained MMA in Houston, Texas, and I went to a place in Pearland, and the owner was a guy named Saul something, I forget, but he was Tito Ortiz's trainer.
Nice.
And this is when Tito was big. This was like 2006-07. UFC just broken up, you know, or blown up. Sorry. So the Forrest Griffin Stephen Bonner fight was 2005, and Tough 3. That was the finale of Tough 1. Tough 3 was a couple of years later with Ken Shamrock and Tito Ortiz. And our coach, maybe it was a little later than
Ken
that.
Ken Shamrock. Wow.
Yeah.
It's old school.
But you know what? It wasn't that one, I don't think. Maybe it was another one. But either way, our coach.
I love Ken Shamrock.
Tito did two seasons. And I think it must have been the second. But Tito left. Or not Tito. Coach Saul left to go coach Tito for the season. Like, he was on the TV thing. And he came back. And I remember, like, it was so cool. I trained at Militech Academy there. Learned a few things. The coach was a total hard ass, but totally made you feel like you're a man at the end of the day. He's like, you boys did tough. Like, I don't know. Like, I remember I walked in there. I walked outside in my truck barefoot, and I walked back in. And he goes, mother, trying to bring staff in here. Go wash your damn feet. So I was like, yes, sir. And I ran and, like, washed my feet in the sink. And some guy's like, hey, he's just being tough. And then after that, he's like, all right, man. Just, you know, got to be careful. Like, go wrestle this guy. And, so I trained there. That place went under because the boss was like screwing like six women and like was totally in debt and totally a terrible guy.
Sounds about right.
And I remember, I love this because this coach, I loved like Militech. Pat Militech used to run the UFC like when it first started. He had all the best camps. Matt Hughes was out of there. A few other like pros.
Matt Hughes.
Yeah. He was dominant champ. He was out of Militech. So I loved the Militech name. And whenever like the place was closing down, the guy was like, hey guys, his name was Coach Frank. His ears were completely just like gone from wrestling. Just a total pit bull, man. Pit fighter, like just such a beast. But totally cool dude. He was like, all right guys, y'all stuck with me. And what's crazy, I brought my friend. This was his first day there. He was there on a free pass. He's like, you guys are stuck with the program. You guys done it. This place has been bleeding money for a while. So I'll tell you what, y'all go grab three things you want off the rack in here. So I got all this like awesome training gear. My buddy got decked out. He's like, that was the best class I've ever been to.
I got for free.
Yeah,
that's
got
awesome.
All for free.
Like, I'm taking this shit.
Yeah. From there, we got sent to Saul's camp. And to get initiated in there, like, all right, we're going to see who's real and who's not. Y'all are going to fight all our pros. I'm like, okay, I'm not. So they put us in there. And like, there was one guy from our gym who was like a Taekwondo, like Asian guy. And like, he stood toe to toe with them. And they were like, they respected him. The rest of us, I just beat the shit out of and just like, didn't care about. Like, it was just a ring of pain. Like, I fought, like, five MMA pros, like, in a row. And, like, a couple of them were, like, nice. They were, like, hey, don't throw like... They were, like, you know, like, hey, you shouldn't throw like that. You're going to get caught like this and, like, hit me. And be, like, you know what I mean? Yeah, I do now. And, but one guy was just, like, freaking slugging at me. Like, just really trying to inflict pain. I was, like, God, make this stop. Like... And coming here like for a brawl, and he's like, "All right, I think we've like after like an hour of this, he's like, all right, I think I know about where everybody's at." I'm like, yeah, dude, because I could have just told you.
I feel like this is like the last thing I would like just volunteer or pay money to go do. Yeah. Just get, like,
oh have, yeah, like, you're ready. To,
I don't know. Walk just over like, maybe we're like this. Wired different, but I the last thing I would ever do is just like show up, and be like, "Hey, let me into the gym," and be like, "All right, well, this guy's good. I got to kick you in the stomach 9 times. Guy's gonna have to
kick your ass right now. Yeah. Like, you're ready for this.
Thank you.
In
appreciate
hindsight,
it
really felt yeah."
Well, you were younger, you were sprier.
Yeah, I love the darkness and all this. So the way we close these episodes out is everyone comes in and like takes a volume of my short collection of vinyl, and you have selected Jay Dilla. So talk a little bit about Jay Dilla before we close this shit out. That's it right there.
Yeah, so Jay Dilla, I used to live in a house with two of my buddies. And this was in 2007, and we were living large. I had we graduated high school 2 years before. I was doing a pipeline job that was doing really well for me, and they both had jobs. And I just remember we did Jay Dilla all day was a thing, like the
Jay Dilla.
Yeah,
all day.
We were kind of trying to make it as rappers.
If people don't know, Jay Dilla is like the. Would be the classic music of rap music, because like Jay Dilla's production wise has been in so many songs.
Oh, he's in everything. Any great CD you liked in the 90s or whatever, Jay Dilla's hands were on it. I mean, he just makes the dopest beats. RIP to him, by the way. I was a big fan, and I love Time, the Donut of the Heart off this one. And like just looking at this vinyl here, like there's what, 1, 2, 3.
Jesus.
32 songs on this track. Like, they're all different beats that he made, and he just, like, mashes up. That's his thing. He just, like, flows between beats. And my buddy Jarrell and Andy, when I lived there, like, we would listen to this stuff, and we'd have Jay Dilla on. And, man, he's a legend, man. RIP to Jay Dilla. I could not pass that up and not move on. Like Jay Dilla.
Like the fact that like I know you're from Houston.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that you know how great rap music is, and like just like Jay Dilla is like, shit, this is important. And like I love it. I think that's a good strain on that.
Yep. Peanut Butter Wolf is on here. He's good. Jay Lib. Donuts. Oh man. Yeah. This is a good one.
Yeah. This is our sixth episode. Appreciate y'all coming out. Chris Hobart.
Thank
appreciate
you for having me. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for bringing me out here.
Yes, sir. Some good stories in there. We'll catch y'all on the next one. Appreciate you.
Pop, pop.
You hear that? That's the sound of everyone's credit score going up because of Chris Hobart. Because he's on first stage.